This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is part of our episode, Preservation. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thomas Jefferson wanted to preserve the languages of native tribes in North America. There were hundreds of them. The Cherokee, Shawnee, Yamia, Apache. Part of Jefferson's interest was scientific. He thought language could hold clues to the history and origin of native populations. Part of that interest was political. He wanted to understand which tribes were allied, who was friend, who was foe.
Jefferson's own policy was basically, if they cooperate and assimilate and don't cause any trouble, that's fine. But if they resist, then we're going to fight them and kick them out.
That's Brian Carpenter, curator of Native American materials at the American Philosophical Society.
Those policies were established by Jefferson and carried out further for decades later, obviously.
Jefferson thought that many tribes were not going to be around much longer.
That we have suffered so many of the Indian tribes already to extinguish.
And he wanted to preserve their languages for posterity. So he came up with a list of about 200 words that he thought would be present in all languages. Brian and I were looking at an early version of that list, handwritten by Jefferson.
I can see doe, fish, hawk, worm.
So he's going with animals, then birds, insects, then he goes to trees. So he's doing classes of words.
Squash.
And then he gets to the sort of
wheat.
Natural phenomenon.
Once he finalized his list, Jefferson had it printed, and he handed it out to anybody who might interact with native tribes.
Traders, missionaries.
So he was asking these people to write down how the native people they encountered said those words. He was crowdsourcing, basically.
People who would be involved in treaty negotiations. So this is why he gave them to people like Lewis and Clark.
And then people would send those lists back.
So this is an example of one in the Miami language, which is from the Ohio River Valley area, Indiana. A guy named Volney sent to Jefferson. Maybe about half to a third of the words are filled in.
Fire. Kotewe, earth. Ashikiwe, sky. Akishikwe, sun. Ipete kilswa, water. Nipe, wind. Alampsinwe.
And Jefferson kept collecting and collecting.
I have now been 30 years availing myself of every possible opportunity of procuring Indian vocabularies to the same set of words.
But the thing is, he never got around to analyzing those vocabularies. He planned to do that once he retired.
So when he left the White House, he put all of his stuff into mini trunks and put them on a barge going down the James River towards Monticello. While this barge was going down there, Jefferson wasn't with them. A thief came upon it and saw these mini trunks filled with heavy-looking things and rifled through them.
Jefferson later described the incident in a letter.
The thief, being disappointed on opening it, threw into the river all of its contents, of which he thought he could make no use. Among these were the whole of the vocabularies. Some leaves floated ashore and were found in the mud, but these were very few, and so defaced by the mud and water that no general use can ever be made of them.
And he was, of course, quite depressed about it.
Perhaps I may make another attempt to collect, although I am too old to expect to make much progress in it.
Now, he's also a little bit dramatic because the way he puts it, it sounds like everything was lost. There was a little bit that was saved.
What was saved of Jefferson's collection now lives at the American Philosophical Society.
You can see that there's still remnants of dirt and mud from where they were down in the silt.
That's Renee Walcott. She is a conservator there.
So these are all moldy and have large areas of loss. They're no longer moldy, but they were moldy, and that's why there's so much paper missing.
It's part of her job to make sure that what's left of these vocabularies is preserved for future generations. It's pretty tough.
So, for example, these vocabularies, they have both letterpress printed ink, which is an oil-based ink, and that tends to be very stable over the long term. And then this brown, more faded ink, which would originally have been black, is iron gall ink, which contains ferrous sulfate as well as acids derived from oak galls. And it makes a beautiful ink, but it's very acidic. And also, if it has too much iron in it, the iron ions can actually attack and oxidize the paper.
But beyond preserving these brittle sheets of paper, there is an effort to preserve the languages of native people. For example, Miamia, which was described on one of Jefferson's word lists, is now once again being spoken by members of the Miami tribe, or the Miamia, as they are called in their own language.
Well, aya cheke, kin wananisia wains waane nila Miamia.
That is Daryl Baldwin introducing himself in Miamia. He directs a center in Ohio dedicated to keeping the language and culture of his people alive. The U.S. government forcefully relocated the Miami tribe multiple times. They were scattered. They faced racism. Fewer and fewer people spoke the language until the last fluent speakers died in the mid-1900s. But Daryl and others in the community managed to bring the language back, and I asked him, what does it take to make that happen?
A lot of language records, a lot of data, and the role of linguistics, I can't say enough, is critically important. We're fortunate that the Miami-Illinois language documentation spans almost 270 years, beginning in the late 1600s with some of the older Jesuit materials, all the way up through minor manuscript pieces through the 1800s that were taken down by various individuals. And then finally, when you get into the very late 1800s, early 1900s, you start getting some trained linguists that are working with some of the last speakers of the language, first-generation speakers. Coupled with that has to be a desire from the community to want to speak their language again, and that's the revitalization side of this.
Why is it so important to keep a language like yours alive and going?
First and foremost, language is the core of a group's identity. And I think that our language communicates our culture most efficiently and effectively. Our languages are central to our preservation of our identity and to the transmission of cultural knowledge.
As you went about reviving this language, did you have to add a lot of words or, you know, to modernize it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the feature of a living language, is that it has the ability to grow and to add new vocabulary for new things that come along. Of course, in a revitalization effort where you're working from documentation, there needs to be a certain amount of time to learn the grammar and to begin to build an intuition for the language so that you can create new terms.
Can you give me an example of some new terms you had to create?
Yeah, I think one for a computer, kinde linda kane, which just literally means that thing that thinks fast. It's a good example, I guess. Yeah.
What about a cell phone?
Oh, achimwa kane, the thing you speak through or talk through. It's also used for microphone.
So did you teach yourself the language or who taught you?
I am self-taught. My effort began in the home in 1991. When my children were still young, my wife and I chose to homeschool our children for the purpose of being able to reestablish Miamia language and culture. My kids are grown now and have gone off, and some of them have started their own families. But the language continues to grow, and of course today there's a lot more community resources.
And your kids speak it, and your grandkids?
Well, my grandchild is 2. And some of her first words are in Miamia, and we're doing our best to immerse her as much as possible. So, yes, I do believe she'll have a degree of proficiency, yes.
What's your hope for the future of this language?
Well, you know, I think I was driven by a need to know, by a need to more strongly connect with my cultural heritage, and I saw learning my language as the means of doing that. And so what's most important for me is that all Miamia people, no matter their age or how connected they are to the community, have a right to their heritage language. And for those that want to learn, that pathway towards learning should be made as easy as possible for them. And that's all I really hope, is that they have access to it because it is theirs, and then they have a right to engage with it and use it on a daily basis.
Daryl Baldwin is the director of the Miamia Center at Miami University in Ohio.